Welcome to MAP, the bi-weekly market access podcast hosted by me, Dr. Stefan Walzer. I am the innovator of Market Access 4.0 and a health economist by training and working in the fields of market access, reimbursement, pricing, and health economics since 2004. Discover Market Access 4.0 and unveil the future with our innovative solutions. Max Insights, our fast and easy AI-based reimbursement planning platform. Dobo, our new revolutionizing way of creating reimbursement dossiers across the globe with the first and only dossier writing AI bot. Cubo, our new AI-based objection handling platform. And Waffle, train with Waffle's virtual reality genius in an immersive environment and with an AI-based counterpart. We are Market Access 4.0, so check out our website, marketaccess4-0.com. And now let's dive into the current discussions, processes, and trends in market access across the globe. So welcome to another podcast episode on our Market Access podcast series. Today, we're trying to, let's say, move into the area maybe of the future. We're speaking about artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and whatever might have potentially an impact on market access beyond 2024, 25. For that, I have Gleb Kutepov directly from Ukraine. I think he's an expert in, I would say, AI and VR. But Gleb, please feel free to introduce yourself as well.
Hey, Stefan. Thank you for having me here today. So my name is Gleb. I'm a CEO and founder of Modelate, the company which develops software for HR area, pharmaceuticals area. And of course, we are working with AI and VR, as these are very promising technologies and, I would say, trends.
Very good. I mean, you said already promising, right? So what are what you would maybe think, most promising kind of areas in terms of AI and VR? So which kind of innovations would you potentially foresee coming into the healthcare market? But obviously, as you has already said as well, maybe also into the healthcare market access area.
I would say, so AI has been here for a while, right? So we heard about AI since 5 years at least. But there was a big leap forward with the development of generative AI and so-called LLMs. So basically neural networks that can produce content. So like you probably all know ChatGPT and DALL-E. So things that can paint for you or write things for you. And of course, you can use it in market access. So for instance, you can have data-driven insights. So for instance, AI can analyze your previous negotiations with payers and tell you, okay, which arguments, which lines, which script shall I use with the next payer to achieve the maximum success? So you can tailor your value communication much better for a particular payer, as an example.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, as you said, I think generally it's more the kind of question, probably rather defining the kind of area where you want and could potentially then use AI in general. But what are the potential key challenges would you maybe see as well in the market? Why do maybe not more market access managers use already any kind of language models and maybe other kind of applications? I mean, at least that's my kind of feeling so far. I think the excitement is there. People are looking for those innovation solutions, but I would say it's still maybe more conservative, meaning a lot of people do not yet use it.
I think there are several points to that. So maybe let's start. So as you know, these language models, they contain data from some point in time to some point of time. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if ChatGPT contains data by 2022, then you will not get your questions answered, which relate to the newest material, right? So probably if there's new COVID-19 variant came out a month ago, ChatGPT would probably not know about this.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another thing, there are always concerns about data privacy and security. So everything which is contained in ChatGPT or other OpenAI publicly available LLM is available to everyone. So basically, your competitor, if you feed your information into this LLM, your competitor will have access to that, mm-hmm. right? So in this case, you have to work with so-called overlayers. So having your own private layer on the generally available LLM.
I think you're probably, let's say, mentioned a very important point, which I guess also most of the let's say lay people maybe also know, which is the kind of privacy issue. So if you do not want, let's say, to share something with the outside world, you might or should maybe not include it in maybe ChatGPT and the like. And that's obviously even more important, let's say, when taking the industry into consideration. But maybe, let's say, people, I don't want to say lay people, but for people who are not yet that familiar with artificial intelligence, could you explain in relatively simple terms what you mean by those different kind of layers? Meaning we can take a language model and then we make it, let's say, more secure, maybe owned by a client?
Okay, let me give you an example. So there is a technique which is called RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, right? So imagine you're in a courtroom and you're hearing a case and there is a judge who knows a lot of general information, right? So he basically can judge most of the cases. But when there is some specific case in some specific area of law, you have to call an expert. So this expert, this is a piece of your privately owned information, which that your company owns, which no one knows about, but you can call it into your LLM as you need it. So, and one of the techniques is called, RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation.
Okay, yeah, that's making it probably a bit more, let's say, easy to digest, I guess, for everybody who is maybe not a programmer. But that's a good example, I agree. So, I mean, one of the fields I think we also, let's say, talk quite a bit and try to work as well together is, let's say, around negotiations or education, those kind of things, especially in the healthcare area, obviously. And I guess we're probably going to the similar kind of direction. If you would think generally, let's say, about the next, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years or so, and think about the current available language models and other kind of maybe innovation you have on your kind of radar and screen, how would you see the health economics and outcomes research market access area potentially change? Or maybe does it change at all? Because maybe, as you would think, market access managers are more conservative than the average people, maybe.
Oh, let's think. I hope this will not sound too futuristic. For instance, before you go to a payer, you prepare your value deck, you prepare your models, you prepare your objection handlers, but you probably never train because you cannot have like train your negotiation process because you cannot have this environment where you will be having your negotiation. You will never have the real person in place with who you will be having negotiation. And you cannot predict what will be the mood of the person, what kind of question will he be asking you. So you never have this like immersive simulation. And I think this is a future so that you can really prepare an immersive environment with a real person, be it even a virtual version person, with the real questions, with the script, which is not always predictable. So really have a good preparation and may even let system improve yourself. Let system analyze how you negotiate. What's your tone of voice? Did you use all the objection handlers you had? How was your eye movement? You can track your eye movement with Apple Vision Pro now. So there are a lot of improvements, I think.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one. And obviously it's something we also, let's say, work together. But I think probably this is probably bringing all of the different, let's say, layers together, right? We have virtual reality, where I think you just said it's an immersive kind of environment where we could maybe listen to the, let's say, similar kind of voice to a similar kind of looking person you might maybe see in a negotiation, together with, I think, the example you said before, right? Going to court, you might just get the expert in that room, which would basically mean you would add anything what you need to prepare, right? Your value deck, your publications, your messages, your Q&A and whatever. And then everything is basically merged and you can train basically wherever you are.
True, as long as you have your virtual reality glasses. I have a funny example. So like probably every one of us played computer games when we were a kid. Like you played, for instance, I liked car racing games, right? But if I would come to my father or mother and tell them, right, I think I can drive your real car because I played enough games, they would probably laugh, right? But now as your environments became more and more real, So for instance, in racing games today, in simulation games, you have real tracks which have real bumps, which look exactly the same as the track in reality. You have real car models which drive exactly the same as in reality. And now it's reality. The people play in simulation and then they go racing on the real track and they achieve sometimes better results than racers on the track, the real racers. And there was even a movie about it called Gran Turismo, if I'm not mistaken. So I think with negotiations, it's going in the same direction. Like, play as much as you can in virtual reality, try all possible scenarios, try scenarios where you're under pressure, try scenarios where your player is nice to you, and get prepared and then go to the real negotiation space.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think I was also just laughing because I think my son was just, let's say, going to the same kind of direction a couple of months ago. You know, I know how to drive a car because I played a lot of those games, right? And I was exactly, I mean, as you just said, your parent, right? I was a bit laughing, but ultimately I was stopping laughing. I was just saying, yeah, probably you could at least do most of the things, right? I mean, because as you said, it's getting more and more realistic. And to be honest, I think just while you were speaking, I mean, when thinking about pilots, they do that since many years, right? They need to go into simulations and train it there and do that, let's say, on a very regular kind of basis, even if they normally fly real kind of planes, right? And that's probably something we need to consider as well in the areas we are currently in.
Yeah. So what's the difference between the pilot, good pilot and good negotiator? Both need training.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I think the kind of missing piece so far, as I would say, was probably really that I think, as you said it, I think it was hard to get moving kind of scenarios, right? Or let's say maybe kind of innovative solutions where you would not always get the same kind of scenario in front of you, right? Because then obviously your brain knows it. I mean, you know how to react. Because I think one of the things would just come back to the pilots, it's also that kind of, it's a surprise factor, right? How would you react if something's happening? What is maybe unlikely, but you would still need to deal with that. I think that's the same in negotiations, right? You can always read and prepare and think and speak maybe just between us, but what if that's the surprise factor? And that's maybe one of the key things as well, right?
I think the difference between so the technologies gave us a possibility, us programmers or developers of the system, not to think of all possible scenarios beforehand because generative LLMs they kind of think instead of you, right? So when you're looking at a race car simulator, your situation is usually predictable. If you turn right, your car will behave predictable according to some very complex function. And I think humans, it's really hard to model humans like this. Therefore, AI is really suitable technology for training negotiations.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Fully agree. I think that's an interesting one. I think because it's a content piece, and it's also the part that you can, let's say, in total, I would say, prepare yourself, because you can go into, let's say, those kind of immersive kind of situations when I'm not speaking to clip, even that maybe we are, let's say, in the same or on the same kind of platform, virtual platform. I think the brain doesn't recognize it if you, let's say, put you into, I don't know, a health minister's avatar, for example, because that's still probably making me or putting me into a stressful situation.
Another interesting point is that VR has also developed very much in the last several years. Like, imagine the version of Oculus Rift. Let's take Oculus Rift 2. It was like 3 years ago when you had your huge headset, you had to have your PC running several video cards, you had to have external tracker. And at the time when you set up all this, like you you don't have a, you're not in the mood to train anymore.
Exactly. You
But
need
now
break.
exactly. But now if you take a look at whatever Meta Quest 3 or Apple Vision Pro, it's just a headset which has like it has a perfect speed. You don't need a PC, you don't have cables, your battery can run for 2 to 3 hours. And you also have very good see-through performance, so there is no delay. You're not getting this dizzy feeling. You have directed audio, so there's a lot of improvement. And I think this gives us a lot of space for new innovative applications in healthcare market access area.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that's also what I had basically on my list as well, just generally. I mean, how would you foresee that this might even further evolve? I would agree. I think, taking the let's say version 3 of the Oculus, I think that's already a big improvement to the second version, right? But how would you see those kind of goggles changing as well in the next 2, 4, 5 years? What do you think it might get, just as thin as, let's say, normal glasses, what we use otherwise?
I doubt that it will be as thin as normal glasses, because besides glasses, you have a lot of cameras, you have a lot of hardware. So basically, these video cards that you had in your PC before are somewhere in your glasses right now. So I think it's unlikely. Where I see the most development potential is the actual environment. So Facebook promised us Meta world several years ago. I don't see it yet. So there are different developments in this space, but we cannot say, all right, we speak only in Meta world. So real world, we don't need it. There is a great Meta world. So there must be some leap soon. And that's what I expect.
That makes probably sense. Just trying to come back again to the kind of security question or security considerations maybe. When I would be thinking, let's say, an industry company, so a big pharma company, for example, would think of, let's say, using one of the pieces what you have as well, let's say, mentioned a bit before, meaning a virtual reality platform that their kind of employees could, for example, train negotiations. Is there anything what is needed, for example, from the IT department to be integrated? Obviously, systems are very different. But as you have just said, I think we're moving into, let's say, the areas where we have the Apple goggle and the Oculus 3, where you would not need anymore even a computer. Even though that maybe it's a question, how do you get then the kind of documents, let's say, uploaded, or the kind of, let's say, scenarios maybe uploaded through the AI? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it will be somehow similar to when the iPads were introduced. So when the iPad first appeared, every corporate client said, no, guys, it will never come. It will be like 10 years before it comes. But then someone brought privately an iPad and they started using it. And then they started exploring apps. And then at some point, IT teams and developers thought, okay, maybe we need some kind of corporate app store applications. Then companies IT saw these app store applications and installed them. And then at the end, we are where we are now. So you have your private app stores where you have apps which are approved by corporate IT. And I think it's going to be somehow similar with the VR glasses. Just maybe another point that's worth mentioning. So in every application, you need basic security features. You have to take care of your authentication. You have to have your two-factor authentication. You have to have your role-based access control. So you have different roles. They have different access rights. These are basics. Taking care of privately identifiable information. Anonymizing things where needed. So this is basic hygiene that we need to have.
Yeah, I think it's a good kind of analog to the iPad, because I remember I was still in the industry when the first version of iPad was basically being launched, and people were discussing it internally. There were working groups internally, and there were discussions and across different functions. And I think it looked exactly as you said, like a kind of nightmare to implement. And suddenly it worked. Suddenly everybody got an iPad, and life was getting even a bit more easy. Beyond, let's say, the kind of discussion we had with VR and AI with the platform and negotiation and everything, obviously everybody is as well thinking about AI in the area of, let's say, data crunching, data analyzing and the like. I mean, obviously in healthcare market access, we're also dealing a lot with, let's say, coding, right? Coding for, let's say, reimbursement, outpatient, inpatient codes across different countries, across different jurisdictions, et cetera. And also, for example, health technology assessment decisions. I would imagine this is also an area where AI could help a lot and streamline probably a lot of the processes.
To your first point, I think with AI, it's important that now you can get, so you mentioned different countries, different contexts, different codes. But in a lot of cases, we are talking about the same concept. So you have different languages, but the concept is the same. You have a different, whatever, ICD code, but the concept is the same. And AI technologies allows us to convert all of this into the same, let's say, vector space. So basically, there's only one meaning of different concepts. And this allows you to easily search for the same concepts, even if you don't know the exact name of the concept or you know only one keyword. It allows you comparing things. So I think there's a lot of potential to that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you mentioned a very good point as well. I mean, what if you're a little bit, let's say, looking for something where you're not 100% sure how it is exactly being named? It's exactly, I mean, what we currently as well have across different jurisdictions. I mean, if we are looking for maybe a specific code and we have not been working in that disease area before, I mean, we as well as humans would still need to, let's say, find a way and maybe screen it and do probably take us all different kind of search strategies and everything. And that's, I think, where AI can streamline and make a lot of time savings as well, right?
Definitely. So AI allows you to analyze big chunks of data and understand the context of data. So AI can understand that concepts which have different syntaxes have the same semantics. So they sound differently, written differently, but they are the same. And in this way, you get the same encoding for the same concept of word. Therefore, when you are searching for it, giving different syntaxes, but meaning the same semantic, you will still get a great result, the right result.
Yeah, exactly. No, I fully agree. Fully agree. I mean, if I would, let's say, be a bit maybe a bit optimistic from an industry's perspective, I would say with all of those potentially new tools, which I would expect in the next 3 to 5 years to come, industry has a big kind of advantage over maybe public institutions, meaning payers, because they might even be more conservative in applying new kind of applications. Would you foresee that this kind of advantage would also be an advantage in order to get, let's say, faster market access, maybe even with potentially higher prices, because the industry might be better prepared? Something, by the way, what a Dutch payer told us when we have been, let's say, doing a course in Rotterdam.
I think you can answer the question about pricing better. I will try to answer the technology part. So, I like to play the game sometimes. Imagine we are in 3 years from now. So, what will we be doing differently to today? So, for instance, I imagine that you will not have to write a value dossier. I imagine that AI will do it for you. But then the next question comes. If AI writes a value dossier for a pharmaceutical company, then probably another AI on the side of HTA will be checking your value dossier, right? So the question is, so sooner or later we will come to that. So then I ask myself, okay, how this value dossier thing will work. If
Yeah.
generated automatically and checked automatically, then this will be a play of AI, which AI
Exactly.
partner.
Yeah, no, I mean, it just reminds me. I think we had a kind of recording, I don't know, probably 2 years ago already, where I was speaking with as well another kind of AI expert from the UK. And we were just discussing if AI might replace market access managers in the future. I think we probably said you always need somewhere a human and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I think, as you just said, it might be a kind of game between different AIs and AI versions, at least from a contents perspective. You could even, let's say, further, let's say, develop it. What I would probably not foresee in the next 5 or 7 years, but you could as well just say even the negotiations could be done by AIs, right? At least checking the kind of different components and the content and the correctness and everything. And hence, it's the only thing which might come back to the humans is the emotional bit, the maybe the, even the kind of, let's say, question if a system or if the people would need it, if they want it, but even that could potentially be automized.
Well, good point. Then there is no job left for us. Actually, when you mentioned emotional component, I have another application of VR in mind. It's not my application. Some companies do it as well. But for instance, a good immersive VR experience can lead you through the day of a patient with a condition and imitate using a new treatment in this condition. So it will help you understand the emotional component of the burden of disease and not only the economics. So this is also something to think about.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, no, I agree. Because I think, especially, I think when you get into negotiations, sometimes it's just back to numbers, right? what is the hazard ratio of, what is the, I don't know, risk difference by and whatever, or what is the difference in terms of quality of life score? But what does it mean for the patient, right? And that's, exactly. I mean, I think, yeah, that's a good one. That might even make, I don't want to say life, but it might at least get that kind of patient focus as well back into the discussion.
Exactly. Because how can you feel 0.2 quality?
Exactly.
What is this? But when you wear your VR headset and, you know, it simulates some kind of dizziness or partial blindness or whatever, simulates to some condition, then you're really feeling. And I think we shouldn't forget the emotional and really human component.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So there's still a job for us at the end of the day.
We'll find a job.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're coming towards the end already of a kind of future thinking, let's say, scenario. And, you know, we have as well discussed about, let's say, potential outlooks of, let's say, our world in the next, I don't know, 5 years or so. Anyhow, how would you see the world of healthcare market access on a VR AI basis, let's say by, I don't know, 2030, which is in roughly 6 years' time, or 2035?
Ooh, so I think this world will be very tailored. So you will have your market access story or value dossier very tailored, not only to the country as we have now. For instance, you will have it tailored to the payer, to the context, to the previous payer's experiences, and so on. So you will have much more data, and this will allow you to adjust your communication better. I think you will be very much assisted by AI, if not completely. Yeah, the things will be written for you by AI. There will be much more historical data, so you will be able, for instance, to find, AI will help you to find a target group for your treatment based on the data it knows. Of course, negotiation simulations. I think you will be able to improve your negotiation skills in a matter of days, months, by just using your VR headset and AI assistant. Yeah, and one thing I mentioned before, VR will help you understand the perception of the payer. And help you educate the payer, for instance, giving them the real feeling of a condition and the treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds, I would say, promising. Absolutely. And I mean, I can foresee it. I think I can feel it. I mean, we're using really some of the tools. We're developing some of the tools as well. But I think there's probably a lot of new things as well to come. I think it's also when you see the advancements of AI and VR, of the different platforms and the tools which are available also over the sometimes even months, right? I think you could just foresee or imagine what is still doable even further in the future.
Exactly.
Perfect. Clip, I want to thank you. Well, that was a really great discussion. I think a future forward-looking kind of discussion. Let's just see how the world will change in the next 5, 10, 15 years in terms of healthcare market access and AI. Thank you, Clip.
Thank you so much, Stefan, for having me.
Market access 4.0, the future of market access, whatever you want to call it, I think it was a great discussion today with Clip Kutepov, and bringing the virtual reality and the artificial intelligence piece as well in the healthcare market access area. How that would look in the future, we'll need to see, but I think the first attempts are being made, and I think whoever knows me personally knows as well that, let's say, with some of the concepts, we are also on the forefront, like the code lookup called Max Insights, but also with the virtual reality and the artificial intelligence with respect to negotiations. How everything will basically look like, and if we will finally have, let's say, a kind of discussion and battle between the different artificial intelligence or language models, we'll need to see. But I think maybe in 5, 7, 9 years, this might be the future, that the language models of the payers are checking the language model results of the industry, and the humans might just simply, let's say, put the strategic points in there as well as answering maybe then the kind of inconsistencies with the support of AI. So I think also coming back to a discussion I had with Andrew Bates a couple of months ago, where we discussed the question, would AI replace human meaning market access managers. I think that's always a place, obviously, for humans, even if it's, let's say, focusing a lot on the strategic point. Glip was also mentioning the emotional part of that. And finally, the decision-making. I think that's a very important component and bit. And we see that also in other areas where artificial intelligence and virtual reality, for example, is just supporting the work of humans. I personally think the future looks very bright and very promising and very exciting. So let's just see how Market Access 4.0 will look like. That was an episode of MAP, the Market Access podcast provided by Mars Market Access and Pricing Strategy, which is your healthcare consultancy in the German-speaking markets. MAP is available every second week with a new episode, so watch out. And in case you might have questions, contact me directly and or visit our website on www.marketaccess-pricingstrategy.de.